Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Andy Herman NFL. You can also follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. Really fun conversation and discussion today. We're going to be going over basically a look ahead to the 2025 offseason and free agents, needs, what the roster looks like, cut candidates, coaching decisions. We're going to run through all of it. Before we get there, a couple things. One, I know every time that I do this in season, there's always a couple people that want to say, Andy, we're in the 2024 season. The team is 6-3. Can't we just enjoy the 2024 Packers before we start looking ahead to 2025? Absolutely. But guess what? We're Packers fans. We're super smart. We can multitask. We can take a little time on the bye week to put the 2024 Packers on timeout for just a moment and start looking ahead to what this offseason could be, because it's always going to be a very important thing as we look ahead to the future of the Green Bay Packers. And I think it's always, you know, not only, you know, fun, but entertaining and exciting to see what this team could look like in future seasons as well. So we're going to take a look at that today. We can definitely multitask. I promise we're not looking past 2024. This 2024 team is very exciting. We're going to have the opportunity to hopefully watch them grow in the second half of the year and be the team that we expect them to be. But like I said, we can multitask. We can take a small look ahead and look at what 2025 in the offseason might hold as well. So we're going to do that today. And then also, we are going to go over right now our Luigi's Pizza player of the first half of the season. And it should be no surprise to anybody that this is Xavier McKinney. He has been beyond advertised. The 6 interceptions, the sack, the fumble recovery, the consistent performance in the back end of the defense, taking good angles and getting to the point where teams are not even throwing in his direction because they are afraid that he is going to pick it off. That is a big time impact performer that Green Bay has added to the back end of this defense. The safety room has really, in my opinion, been the saving grace of this defense. Corners have been up and down, right? Jair's been mostly good, but has missed a game here or there. And then Carrington Valentine hasn't really had that opportunity. Keyshawn's been up and down. Stokes has not performed well. The linebackers have been inconsistent, specifically Quay Walker. Defensive line, edge, and defensive tackle have not performed up to expectations. It's the safety room that's kind of carrying this defense. Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard. Those three are right now what I think is really keeping this defense together and keeping them competitive and making them do or allowing them to do some of the really fun things that Jeff Hafley is doing on the defensive side of the ball. That's in large part due to the safeties and specifically Xavier McKinney. So he is the Luigi's player of the first half of the season, Luigi's Pizza player of the first half of the season. Of course, you can get your Luigi's frozen pizzas in your local grocers, especially if you're in Wisconsin and in neighboring states. They're in 6 states in total. You can go to their website, follow them on Twitter at Luigi's Pizza, and grab those Luigi's pizzas. No victory pizza this week, but I might do a preemptive, you know, or not even preemptive, just a celebratory first half of the season, 6-3 record victory pizza on Sunday. I'm excited about the second half of the season. I think there's going to be a lot of Luigi's victory Mondays to come. And of course, when those happen, they are giving away a case of frozen pizzas every week. So hashtag Luigi's victory Monday anytime there is a Packers victory. All right, let's get to a look ahead to the 2025 offseason, because yes, I think this is a very fun thing to look at. And it's very interesting to kind of go through it from coaches to players to all of it to see what this team could look like and who they have under contract, what roster decisions they'll have to make. So we're going to get through all of it. Let's start from a coaching standpoint. This should be one of the easier things to sort of go through. Matt LaFleur not going anywhere, very clearly. I mean, he could lose every game the remainder of the season. He's still going to be the head coach next year. There's nothing that's going to change there. And that's certainly not going to happen either. He's a phenomenal head coach. He's going to stay as head coach. Adam Stenovich, I don't see him having any head coaching opportunities, nor do I think there's going to really be any situation where they would move on from him and go in a different direction. Jeff Hafley's been good, not good enough, in my opinion, to get a head coaching job. Could he get an interview? Maybe, maybe. But I think it's highly unlikely that some team just hands over the reins to the franchise, to Jeff Hafley at this point, unless they go on an unbelievable run defensively in the second half of the season. If that happens, Packers get to or win a Super Bowl, and it's largely in part due to the defense, then yes, I think teams will come calling and there's an opportunity there. But for now, I do mostly expect Jeff Hafley to be back next season. Rich Bisaccia is a bit more interesting. I think it would take a disastrous special teams performance in order for him to get fired. Remember, he's not just a special teams coordinator, but he's also the assistant head coach. I think they view his contributions to the team very highly, even if the special teams isn't maybe as advertised. I think you can chalk some of the special teams issues up to a personnel issue. The kicker has not been in place up until maybe, hopefully, Brandon McManus just a couple weeks ago. Daniel Whalen's been great, and that's been something that you can actually give credit to Rich Bisaccia for. The long snapper, I don't think Matt Orzech is all that good. You know, the returning game, they haven't had the opportunity with Keyshawn Nixon, the punt returners. It's not been great from Rich Bisaccia. I'm not trying to make any sort of excuse for him or anything. I'm just saying, in order for him to get fired and them to go in a different direction, I think it's going to take something brutal to happen in order for them to even consider that. And that has not happened so far. It's not been good. I think we can all agree with that, but I don't think it's been to the point of we're going to let Rich Bisaccia go, nor do I think it's even in the conversation at this point. So I'd expect all of the coaches, head coach and coordinators, to be back at this point. Assistants, could a Jason Vrabel or a John Dunn get a look as a offensive coordinator or something like that? They're highly thought of by Matt LaFleur. People really seem to appreciate this Matt LaFleur offense and what it's accomplished and capable of. I think what's going to hurt them is Nathaniel Hackett and Luke Getsy. Those two who came from Matt LaFleur's system and went and did offenses now in four different locations, Denver, New York for Hackett, and Chicago, and what was it, the Raiders for Getsy. It didn't work anywhere. So I think teams are going to be hesitant to say, let's pull somebody from this Matt LaFleur coaching tree to go and be our offensive coordinator. Could be wrong, but I think that's going to hurt them a little bit, is the performance of his other proteges at various locations throughout the league. So we'll see, but my expectation is Vrabel, Dunn, and most of this assistant coaching staff will be back. The big question, of course, is going to be Tom Clements. Not would they want him back, but will he come back for another season? He's at that age where at any moment he could retire and say, you know what, I'm good, job done, don't need to do this anymore. If that were to happen, hopefully it doesn't and he's just back, but if that were to happen, you do have Sean Mannion in the building, who, remember, is a coaching assistant right now, and he could be somebody that they tab as the next quarterback's coach. They have Connor Lewis, who's the assistant quarterback's coach right now. They could promote him to quarterback's coach and then Sean Mannion to assistant quarterback's coach. That could be something that happens. We just talked about Luke Getsy. Clearly not good enough as an offensive coordinator, but had a lot of praise in Green Bay for his time as a quarterback's coach. So he could potentially come back and coach the quarterbacks in Green Bay if Clements left. You could also look at Jason Vrabel. He's already the passing game coordinator, and you could look at him and say, hey, with Clements being gone, we want to add something additional to your plate, give you a little bit of a bump in salary, try to keep him happy and around. He would then be the passing game coordinator and the quarterback's coach. That could also look good on his resume moving forward. So I think they would have some options if Tom Clements were to retire. Of course, the best case scenario is that Tom Clements sticks it out and continues to coach in Green Bay and just never retires, just stays in Green Bay forever. I think that's what we would all love. But I suppose Tom does deserve his retirement as well when he is ready for that. Next, let's get to fifth-year options. Green Bay is going to have two very specific fifth-year option decisions that they're going to have to decide on this offseason: Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt. Both options are up. They have the option of giving them a guaranteed fifth year in 2026 or making them an unrestricted free agent in 2026 and letting them play out their contract in 2025. Two very different decisions as of right now. My guesstimate is that right now, Quay Walker does not get that fifth year option. In fact, I would argue pretty vehemently that it would be a massive mistake to give Quay Walker that fifth year option. Now, if he tears it up in the second half of the season, is it within the realm of possibility or should it be a discussion? Absolutely. If he goes on a run and all of a sudden this new defense clicks for him and he just takes off, by all means, pick up his fifth-year option. I'm fine with that. The thing that I think they need to learn their lesson from is when they did this with Darnell Savage and it was an unmitigated nightmare and they desperately wanted to get off that contract in his fifth year and they couldn't do it because it was fully guaranteed. They would have had to trade draft capital to have somebody take on Darnell Savage. Like, it would have been a fourth round pick in Darnell Savage for like a seventh round pick or something like that, which is something clearly they did not want to do. So they were basically stuck with him in 2023. I don't think that's the position that you want to be in with this brutal guaranteed contract for Quay Walker in 2026. So my guess is they declined that. They absolutely should decline that. Devontae Wyatt is a bit more interesting. Interior defensive linemen are getting tougher and tougher and tougher to find based on how they're playing in college football. I do believe that for the most part, this is going to come down to how Devontae Wyatt plays in the second half of the season. And I don't think the Quay one is probably a bit unrealistic, right? Where it's like, yeah, of course, if he just goes on a tear, but he has shown no signs in 2.5 years of going on some sort of crazy consistent tear and all of a sudden tearing up the league, right? That I don't think that's realistic. With Devontae Wyatt, I don't think he needs to go on that big of a tear. I just think he needs to play well to really good in the second half of the season. If he can do that, I think you might be a little bit more willing to take the option on it because, again, defensive tackles are very difficult to find. If you do find them, you're usually giving them big contracts. And I could see Green Bay saying, you know what, first round pick, he's a premium position, he's a good player, let's just give him that fifth year option and we'll figure it out later. And hopefully he clicks and kind of takes over. Now, if he has a poor second half of this season, which I think, again, it's possible, right? I don't think that's outside of the realm of possibility. If he just does not perform and we're talking about a completely inconsistent and unnoteworthy second half of the year, then I think you decline it. If I had to guess today, I think it's right in that 50-50 mark. I think like flip a coin at this point. I think right now, if Goody had to decide at this moment, I think he picks it up. But it is teetering on an edge. And I, quite frankly, I don't have a strong feel on it. I would probably lean towards declining it if it were the decision today. But the great thing is that you do get the second half of the season. And hopefully he's going to be healthy coming out of the bye week. And if he plays really well and gets those pressures and starts being one of the focal points of this defense, it's a no-brainer. But I do want to see him do that. I do want to see him put together that consistent second half of the year and then pick up that option, and I'll feel a lot more comfortable about it. But Wyatt, I think, is a 50-50, and Quay should be about a 0% chance right now, unless, again, he goes on a tear the second half of the season. But that is what we're looking at for fifth-year options. Then let's look at unrestricted free agents, and we'll go through these one by one. And I just put these in order of where they were on the list when I went out and looked at them at Spotrac, so no order of operations here other than how they showed up. Hey everyone, as Green Bay gets set to head into their bye week, I always find the week without a game to be one of my favorite times to play Prize Picks. With Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off, which ones aren't, make your picks in fewer than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Patrick Mahomes against Denver, Russell Wilson against Washington, and CJ Stroud to bounce back huge against Detroit. The best part is there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me. That is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and, most importantly, because of its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as far as those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 28 points in the first month. And what's even better, you can sign up in minutes from your phone and there's no credit check and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Build your credit fast with Kickoff. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 28-point increase in first month based on Equifax Vantage Score 3.0. Changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. Eric Stokes, you guys know how I feel. Eric Stokes should be behind Carrington Valentine, Keyshawn Nixon, and Jair Alexander right now. I wouldn't even have a major issue if he was behind Corey Ballantyne right now, if I'm being totally honest. He's worthy of a 53-man roster spot. If you told me right now that you could get Eric Stokes back next year on a vet minimum deal, I would have to think about it. That's where I'm at with Eric Stokes. I think I'd probably do that, but I almost am more, you know, willing and ready just to say, why? You know what it is. On a vet minimum, is it a decent value there? It is. It is. I don't hate it, but I think it's just time to go in a different direction, get some younger guys in the room, and hopefully they can play better than what Eric Stokes has really ever shown since his rookie year. I wouldn't hate it, but I wouldn't love it. And he's not going to take a vet minimum. I think he'll go for a little bit more than that. Now, whether that's in Green Bay or whether that's somewhere else will remain to be seen. But if I'm Green Bay, it is time to move on. If I'm Eric Stokes, I think it's time to move on. Just try to find something new. Kick off your career in a new place. See if some other team can maybe unlock you in a different way. And it clearly has not worked in Green Bay under two defensive coordinators. So what are we doing here? I think that is a very obvious, let him go, let him find greener pastures, and you can find an upgrade at corner. I think it makes sense for both sides. So Eric Stokes, I'm hoping and predicting that they all go in a different direction for everyone's sake, for Eric Stokes' sake, because I think it'll be better for him, and for the Packers' sake, because I think it'll be better for them. And I will say it one more time, as always, this should go without saying by this point, I hope I'm wrong, and I hope Eric Stokes goes and tears it up the remainder of the year. I just don't see that happening. AJ Dillon is probably a no-brainer. The running back room is stacked. You've got Josh Jacobs, you've got Emmanuel Wilson, you've got Chris Brooks, you've got Marshawn Lloyd, and you could theoretically draft somebody in a late round just to get a flyer on somebody. There's just no room for AJ Dillon on the roster. And he might be willing to come back for a vet minimum. That's fine. He just missed the entire season. Did not play well a season ago. And you just know what there is there. And I'll be totally honest. I'm not taking Dillon over Jacobs. I'm not taking him over Wilson. I'm not taking him over Brooks. And I'm not taking him over Lloyd. So he goes into the offseason, even if he takes a one-year vet minimum, he goes into the season as the number five running back, in my opinion. And with that being the case, even if he takes the one-year vet minimum, I don't think he makes it out of training camp with an actual roster spot, unless there would be a bunch of different injuries at the position. So it makes sense to me that both sides, again, go in a different direction there. I would expect Dillon to be gone. Corey Ballantyne, this will be a vet minimum guy one way or the other. I have no problem bringing back Corey Ballantyne on a one-year vet minimum and letting him compete in training camp. Good special teams guy, good locker room guy. You can give him that opportunity. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, fine. But I think you give him that opportunity, right? And if you want to. If you don't, it's no harm, no foul. It's not like a core player of the team. So again, vet minimum, sign him back, see how he competes in camp. Great. Anything else is probably not worth it. And if he can get something better somewhere else, awesome. Go have it. And we'll see. I think that's a coin flip one way or the other. But if he is back, it should be on a one-year vet minimum. Josh Myers is probably the first interesting one, right? We've talked about this one, especially on a lot of the live chats. If you look at what the going rate is here, think of it this way. Interior offensive line, John Runyon Jr. I would argue Myers probably a little bit more valuable than John Runyon Jr. was going into free agency last year. Runyon got about 3 years, $30 million, about $10 million per year. I would put Myers in a pretty similar category to what Lloyd Cushenberry was doing in Denver. I think Cushenberry was playing a little bit better than what Myers has been in Denver when he signed the free agent deal in Tennessee. Now that free agency or that deal for Tennessee has not worked out well. He did not play well in the first half of the season. And now I think he tore his Achilles. So that has not worked out well for Tennessee. But that contract was about $13 million per year. I think it was like a 3 year, $50 million deal, something like that for Cushenberry. So my guesstimate is, especially with, you know, usually deals going up year over year, he's looking somewhere between a 3 year 10 and a 3 year 13, probably 3 year 12 mil per year. So 3 year 36 is kind of my guess for a Josh Myers contract, maybe 3 years 33. And if that's the case, I think you're probably just better off going in another direction. I think it's probably a worthwhile signing. I wouldn't hate it if Green Bay signed Myers to a 3 year 33. I think there's better options on how to spend that money. But I also, we saw last week, even with the snaps with Elgton Jenkins, right? Where like you kind of take some of that stuff for granted. He's in simpatico with Jordan on the, you know, on the cadence and the checks at the line, all those sorts of things. So I do think that there is that synergy there. And I think he's been better this year when he's healthy. The last game he played with the wrist injury clearly was not himself. But before that, he was, to me, definitely having his best season. How much of that is due to being in a contract year? Your guess is as good as mine. I'll just say I wouldn't hate it if they brought him back. I think it would be too much to pay at around 12, 13 mil per year on a three-year deal. And I think you have players on the roster that could theoretically take his spot. Whether that is Elgton Jenkins, I think the snapping issue was a one-off with the weather and just not being as practiced there. I'm not super concerned about that. But Jenkins, Sean Ryan, Jacob Monk, even Zach Tom, if you absolutely needed to or drafted an offensive tackle or something like that, I think you have options on the team. And I think that money is probably better well spent somewhere else. So I would say likely Josh Myers is somewhere else, but I think it's close. I think we're probably right around a 50-50 coin flip if Green Bay would be willing to bring him back or not. Eric Wilson, my guess is this is sort of a Mercedes Lewis thing where every year he gets a 1 year near vet minimum deal, maybe a slight signing bonus in there to come back, be a core special teams guy and be a depth piece at linebacker. He's kind of like the perfect fifth or sixth linebacker, right? And not only that, but he's a great veteran in that locker room. He's a good mentor to guys like Quay Walker, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper, and any other young linebacker that they bring in. So it's kind of like this perfect situation. You don't need to spend big money on him. He's a vet minimum guy. He's a locker room guy. He's a core special teams guy. You can put him in at linebacker and you're not worried about how he plays. I think it just makes sense. Now, if some team is willing to pay him more, so be it. But if you can get him around that 1 year vet minimum with maybe a little signing bonus kicked in as a sweetener, it would make sense to bring him back. Matt Orzech, the long snapper, interesting one, has not long snapped well. I'm sure they would love an upgrade. We'll have to see what Green Bay does in that situation. Your guess is as good as mine, but my guess is they try to upgrade it, but they could just bring him back and hope for some consistency there. Andre Dillard, you know, that's an interesting one. If so, you're probably looking at a one-year vet minimum, compete in camp sort of thing, but I could see some other team maybe being a little bit more willing, and I could see Dillard saying, hey, I just played with you all year on the one-year vet minimum, and I was like the ninth offensive lineman on your team. I'm going to go try to get somewhere else where maybe I can get some playing time. So my guess is we probably see a separation there, and he probably goes somewhere else where maybe more playing time is available, but if he got back for a one-year vet min, that'd be totally fine. I think the Tyler Davis experiment is probably done, but I could see them, because of his special teams ability, maybe bringing him on a one-year vet minimum to compete in camp as a core special teamer and like a number four tight end. But when you've had back-to-back years where you've missed basically the entire seasons and has never been an upside guy, it's probably just time to move on at this point. Zane Anderson, another one-year vet minimum sort of guy, bring back, core special teamer, is your kind of one of those perfect number five or six safeties, can give you a little bit of depth at the position, but really be one of those guys that is kind of killing it on team. So could see that. TJ Slayton, one of the more interesting ones. I just don't see it. I think this is a contract year. This should be the best you get out of TJ Slayton. He hasn't been a great fit in the defense. He has not broken out in any sort of significant way. And he's just the definition of meh. Like that's TJ Slayton. You get some good stuff here and there. You get some bad stuff that you hear and there. But mostly it's just it's like a wash. It's just a completely neutral player, which is not the worst thing in the world. But let somebody else pay that big contract if that's the case. Even if it's like a 1 year, $5 million, let somebody else do that is kind of where I'm at with it. Now, if they want to bring him back for something like that, I wouldn't hate it. He's a fine rotational piece. He's not bad. He doesn't hurt your team. He just doesn't help it. And if he's not helping it in any sort of real consistent way, then again, let somebody else give him that contract. Isaiah McDuffie, another interesting one, knows the Halfley defense. I actually think he's played pretty well. I think he's a pretty good number four linebacker, can play on teams. It just is, do you want to start looking for maybe a little bit more talent at that position? The linebacker position is going to be an interesting one. The only ones under contract right now, Quay Walker, Edgerrin Cooper, and Tyron Hopper. Now, if you get McDuffie and Wilson back at vet minimum deals, like so be it. But I think you want to probably start getting some more youth in that room. I think Wilson makes sense, but maybe you choose between Wilson and McDuffie, and then you start building, you know, maybe going and getting another draft pick and seeing if you can start building, you know, some youth at that position a little bit more. So we'll see there. I think that one's probably 75% gone, but it wouldn't shock me if they brought McDuffie back. And then Brandon McManus, the kicker, right? They signed him to a one-year deal. We'll see how he kicks the remainder of the year. He's in his early 30s. That could be somebody that you bring back. And if he kicks great the rest of the year, I could see like a three-year deal for McManus. And if not, then they probably look for a younger kicker and try to go in a different direction. But it'll all be dependent upon how McManus kicks for the remainder of this season. All right, Lynn, let's get to, there's no restricted free agents, which is nice. You don't have to kind of consider any of those. You do have a list of exclusive rights free agents. Remember, exclusive rights free agents are awesome. You basically have them at a one-year vet minimum deal, and it's just your decision as a team if you want to give them that. So if there's anyone that's worth their value at all, it's just an immediate yes, and you sign them back, and the player signs back because they have no real rights in that situation. So Aaron Mosby, Bo Melton, Daniel Whalen, Emmanuel Wilson, and Kadeem Telfert are all no-brainers. You'll bring all of them back on the one-year vet minimum deal for their specific contract, and it's, like I said, there's no decisions to be made there. All those guys will be back on one-year deals. Then let's talk about some possible extension candidates, players that will be free agents in 2026 that you may want to consider getting locked up long-term. The first one is interesting. This player would not actually be a unrestricted free agent in 2026. He'd be a restricted free agent in 2026, which is probably why they don't do this. But if I'm Green Bay, I at least consider locking up Daniel Whalen. You found your punter. Get him that long-term deal, get him locked in sooner rather than later, give him a little bit of a bonus above what he would be making on the vet minimum next year, and then maybe you get a little bit of a cut on the restricted free agent year, and then you sign him 4 or 5 year deal, get it done, he's worth it, he's fantastic. That would be one I would definitely consider if I were Green Bay. The next one's interesting, Malik Willis. This is always like the trying to figure out the negotiations here is very difficult. If I'm Malik Willis and his agent, I probably want to see what the next year brings and to see if there's some team that I can go to in 2026 for an opportunity to start or be at least be competitive or be a backup for a team that has a bad quarterback where I might get a chance at some point. Maybe you're the bridge starter. Maybe some team drafts a quarterback in 2026, but they need that quarterback to come in and be the guy to begin with while the quarterback develops. Maybe you get that opportunity for somewhere. So if I'm Malik Willis and his agent, I don't know how eager I am to sign a extension in Green Bay when there's no opportunity, right? Jordan Love is the starter for the foreseeable future. So that's a tough one. But if Green Bay were to say, hey, you're set to make next to nothing in 2025, right? It's a very small deal. I want to say maybe $1 to $2 million, somewhere in that range. What about a 2 year, $10 million deal? You get $3 million more, $3.5 million more in 2025. You get a $5 million deal in 2026. We'll give you a nice signing bonus with it. And we're going to make you the backup quarterback for the next 2 years. And then you can go be an unrestricted free agent after that and go hopefully get a bigger deal then. It's a deal that makes sense for Green Bay. The going rate for a backup QB is, you know, $5 million is probably a really good deal for Malik Willis, especially one that fits your offense so well and can come in and play as efficiently as he has. You get that backup quarterback security for the next 2 seasons. And Malik Willis gets that, monetary security of, hey, all right, I'm going to, you know, almost quadruple my salary in this year and get a really nice $5 million salary next year, which is no guarantee he would get on the open market somewhere in 2026, especially if he were to struggle in preseason in 2025 or not get any playing time opportunities in 2025. There's no guarantee some team's going to offer you that in 2026. So if I'm Green Bay, I at least am open to the discussion and the negotiations and see if something makes sense there. Sean Ryan, I don't think you're ready to give out an extension to Sean Ryan until you see how he plays in 2025. I think that's a no-brainer. You have the wide receivers, right? Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson. I don't think you make those decisions early. I think you see how the receiving core plays next year in 2025 and then make the decisions after that. Kingsley and Igbari, same thing. I don't think you're rushing to get an extension there. Rashid Walker, same thing. I don't think you're looking to get an extension done there. Although that one's a little bit more interesting, especially if he would have a really good end of 2024. Had a great game this past week against Detroit, but you need to see more of those great games. He was struggling before that. So I don't think you're rushing on that one. Zach Tom would be the interesting one. I think if there's a name that you want to get an extension done sooner rather than later, Zach Tom would be that name. The sooner you can get that thing locked in and a big contract going his way, I think the more that's going to benefit Green Bay, and the longer you wait, the higher that price tag is going to go. So if I'm Green Bay, the big extension candidate that I'm working on would be Zach Tom and maybe Daniel Whalen. Malik Willis would be an interesting conversation. Those would be the three that I at least look at if I'm the Packers. How about cut candidates, players that have big salaries that could potentially get cut? Five names on this list: Jair Alexander, Kenny Clark, Josh Jacobs, Keyshawn Nixon, and Rashawn Gary have differing degrees of whether or not you could do it. Jair Alexander is actually the one from a salary cap standpoint that theoretically could get done. I think it's also less likely unless he like misses a huge chunk of the rest of the season or has another suspension issue or something. I think Jair's back next year. He would have a $25.8 million salary cap hit next year. If they cut him pre-June 1st, it would be a $19 million dead cap hit. Either way, in some capacity, $19 million is coming off in dead cap, whether it's, even if you do it post-June 1st, then part of that goes to the following year. You can split it up if you want. It's going to be the same conversation for all five of these guys. But in some capacity, you're paying $19 million in dead cap hit. He has a $25.8 million total salary cap hit. So you could save about $6.8 million next year, and then you would save anything else in future years. It's possible. It's definitely not undoable. So if he doesn't play well, has any sort of issues in the locker room, or has massive injury issue the remainder of this year, you could move off of it. My guess right now is that Jair's back, but that is the one where they will actually have an option to do it or not. Kenny Clark, not an option at all. He'll have a $20 million cap hit next year. He'd have $26.8 million total in dead cap hits. It's just a non-starter. He'll be back next year. Could be a restructure candidate. The contract's not looking great that they just signed him to, but they will have no real option to release him, at least not one that would make sense. So he will be back next year. Josh Jacobs, this is another one that you theoretically could do. $11.3 million in salary cap hit, $9.37 million in dead cap hit. So it's possible. And again, you could kick that out if you wanted to do a post June 1st, but Josh Jacobs has just been playing too well. So that to me is a non-starter. Keyshawn Nixon, $6.8 million salary, $4.3 million in dead cap hit. Another one that theoretically is possible. They're using him as an outside corner, a slot corner, a kick returner, a punt returner at times, a special teams gunner. Like they're using him everywhere. They love him. You may not. They do. I know they do. And I think they keep him around. I don't see him going anywhere. Then Rashawn Gary, $25.5 million cap hit, $25.5 million dead salary. You're just going to hope that he picks it back up. I don't see any real option of releasing Rashawn Gary next year. Trade, if some team offered something crazy, maybe, but I think Rashawn Gary's back. So Jair's an interesting one. Clark is a non-starter. He'll be back. Jacobs, I think based on his play, will easily be back. I don't see them doing anything with Nixon, and Rashawn Gary's basically a non-starter based on the dead cap hit. So Jair would be the one, if any. I don't really see any of those guys getting cut. I think all five are back. Again, Alexander, Clark, Jacobs, Nixon, and Gary. How about some potential playing time losses if Green Bay did move on from some of these players? Not the cut guys, because again, I think all those guys are back, but some if they lost some of these guys in free agency. The Packers have played 567 snaps on defense so far. Isaiah McDuffie has played 390. Eric Stokes, 346. Preston Smith, 308. We, of course, know that he's already gone. TJ Slayton, 229. Eric Wilson, 229. Corey Ballantyne, 43. And Zane Anderson, 1. Those would be some potential defensive snaps that you would need to replace if all of those guys were to leave the team. Josh Myers on offense, he's played 529 snaps. So there would be a significant replacement of snaps there too if you lost Josh Myers on offense. He's the only one that's played that's really at any risk of not being on the team in 2025. How about salary cap space? Ken Ingles projects that after all the minutia of the offseason is done and you actually get your restructures done and your re-signings done that you might need to do and anything that's just like an obvious thing, he projects that Green Bay will have about $25 million to utilize after cap, after cuts and restructures and everything like that. I'm assuming he's taking into consideration his slush fund that he usually does. Either way, even if he didn't, Green Bay would have some money to spend. So that would be, you know, $25 million would be a pretty decent sized contract that you could give. Like I could see them making one splash free agent signing, maybe a couple smaller tier guys, but they will have some flexibility to spend in free agency if they want to. They could be cautious knowing that they've got some big contracts that they're going to have to give out in future seasons. So it's not something that they have to do, but if they feel like the right player is there at the right price, they definitely do have the ability to make at least one splash free agent signing in free agency. From a draft capital standpoint, they'll have their own first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. They traded their seventh for Malik Willis. They got a seventh from the Steelers for Preston Smith. It's not their seventh because they don't own their seventh. They own like a bunch of different options with seventh round picks. So we don't know exactly for sure which team seventh that Green Bay got at this point, but they do get a seventh in that trade. So they have a full complement of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We just don't know which team seventh it is. And then they should also get a seventh round comp pick for Yosh Nijman. Those are never quite guaranteed. There's always a little bit of like, it could not happen, but they should get a seventh for Yosh Nijman as well. So 8 total picks, their first 6 of their own, a 7th in the trade for Preston Smith, and then a 7th round comp pick for Yosh Nijman is what Green Bay is currently looking at. How about what this team looks like as of right now? Let's assume all of the cut candidates do not get cut, all the exclusive rights free agents are back, anyone that's back on their practice squad is back, and anyone that's an unrestricted free agent is gone. All right, let's assume that, because I think that's actually a decently fair way to look at this. And I think some of those unrestricted free agents will be brought back at least to compete in camp. But this is what the core of the team looks like right now in 2025. At quarterback, Jordan Love, Malik Willis, and Sean Clifford. Running back, Josh Jacobs, Emmanuel Wilson, Chris Brooks, Marshawn Lloyd, and Ellis Merriweather. Some of these guys are guys that are on the practice squad right now. You may not recognize some of these names, but they're on the practice squad. Wide receiver, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Bo Melton, Malik Heath, then Cornelius Johnson, Malik Knowles, and Julian Hicks are all in the practice squad, so they could be back theoretically as well. Tight end, Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave, Ben Sims, John Fitzpatrick, and Messiah Swinson. Offensive tackle, Zach Tom, Rashid Walker, Kadeem Telfort, Travis Glover, and Spencer Rowland, who's on the practice squad. Interior offensive line, Elton Jenkins, Sean Ryan, Jordan Morgan, Jacob Monk, and Donovan Jennings. Interior defensive line, Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, Jonathan Ford, and James Esther. Defensive end, Rashawn Gary, LVN, Kingsley Enagbare, Aaron Mosby, Brenton Cox, and Deslin Alexander. Linebacker, Quay Walker, Edgerrin Cooper, Tyron Hopper, and Jamin Davis, who they just signed to the practice squad, remember. Corner, Jair Alexander, Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, Kamal Haddon, Robert Rochelle, and Kalen King. Safety, Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard, Kitano Ladapo, and Omar Brown. Kicker, they have Alex Hale from the practice squad. Remember, Brandon McManus is a free agent. Punter, Daniel Whalen, and they would not have a long snapper. This is actually unbelievable. Outside of long snapper, where they don't have anyone under contract next year, if Green Bay right now lost every unrestricted free agent, didn't sign a single free agent, didn't draft a single player, they can take the field in 2025 tomorrow with that core that we just talked about outside of long snapper. They'll need a long snapper, but outside of that, they could take the field tomorrow and be massively competitive. You just normally do not see that. There is not a significant hole. There's not anything that you look at and be like, oh yeah, they couldn't take the field. Your offense, Love, Jacobs and all their depth at running back, Doubs, Watson, Reed, Wicks at wide receiver, Kraft and Musgrave at tight end, Tom and Walker at tackle, Jenkins at center, Ryan and Morgan at guard. You have your whole starting lineup. Defensively, Rashawn Gary and LVN at defensive ends, Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt at defensive tackles, Quay Cooper and Hopper at linebacker, Alexander, Valentine, and Nixon at corner, McKinney, Evan Williams, and Javon Bullard at safety. Bullard playing in the slot some too. Daniel Whalen at punter, Alex Hale clearly not the guy you want at kicker, and they don't have a long snapper. They can go out and literally compete for a playoff spot in 2025 with the roster that exists without signing a player, with losing every free agent, and without drafting a player. That is unbelievable. Now, clearly there are spots that you want to upgrade there. Their biggest needs, you would love some more offensive line depth if you lose Josh Myers. That should go without saying. You need another pass rusher, right? We've seen it. The edge rusher defensive tackle combo right now, it's not working well enough. So you have to upgrade pass rush in some capacity. It's not there right now. Whether that's a interior defensive lineman, whether that's an edge rusher, I honestly don't care that much, but you need to add a pretty darn good pass rusher in some capacity to this team if you really want to see them reach their potential. They could also just use some defensive line depth in general. Linebacker depth, you know, I think Walker, Cooper, Hopper, Jamin Davis is probably fine to start off with, but I think you're definitely going to need some depth. And again, you're not banking on anything in Jamin Davis. Quay has not been good, and you don't know anything about Tyron Hopper. And even Edgerrin Cooper's been inconsistent. So you'd love a little bit more depth there. Cornerback, you'd love an upgrade. Jair, even if they keep him, right, that decision of potentially releasing him out of that contract already is looking a little bit enticing. It's going to look more enticing in 2026. So how much longer you can count on him? Keyshawn Nixon is definitely going to be very cuttable in 2026. Carrington Valentine hasn't proven anything yet, and you don't have anything after that, at least at this point. So corner is definitely going to be a need, probably in the draft. And then kicker and long snapper. You don't have a kicker on the team outside of Alex Hale, and long snapper you don't have on the team right now. So those are going to be your needs going into the offseason. The big takeaway here is this team that you have right now, for the most part, is going to be your team in 2025. It's not changing all that much, which is why I continue to say the development of this team is the 1A most important thing, because you're not just shooting for 2025. The core of this team is going to be there in 2024. The core of this team is going to be there in 2025 and probably in 2026 too. So keep developing those guys, keep getting them better, because this is really the core of your team for the foreseeable future. And I'm excited about that. I think it's a really talented, really good team. I think Goody has done a tremendous job building the core, and the fact that you can go out and take whatever team is really good in 2025, you could take this team right now that's set up and play them in 2025 and feel confident that you're going to be competitive with them without any additions and with all the subtractions for unrestricted free agents, which is a crazy, crazy thing to say. So love the team, love the core, should stay available or consistent. Plus, they've got some money to spend, up to $25 million to spend in free agency if they want, and a slew of draft picks that'll help improve the team as well. So it should be really, really fun. And of course, that draft will be held in Green Bay, which makes it even that much more fun. All right, that's going to do it for me today. I'll be right back here tomorrow with Perry and Grant. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, SoCal Pack, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Lovin' Football, Puerto Rican Packer, and Dan Gesford. I will see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.